My name is John. I'm here from Gamer Square, just coming to talk to you guys a bit about the Imperial Guard.
And I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase. And like John said, let's get started quickly and just talk about the new Imperial Guard Codex from Warhammer 40,000 and how it's going to affect your gameplay on this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome back to Season 3 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And I want to welcome John to the show for the first time. I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you.
So how long have you been playing the Imperial Guard for?
Imperial Guard was actually my first army for Warhammer 40,000. So it's been, about 6 years.
6 years. Oh, that's nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've been through, is that just 4th and 5th edition, or is that 3rd edition as well?
I started right as the previous edition of the book came out.
Okay. All right, well, I'm glad to have someone knows what's going on with Imperial Guard on this show. I've fought them a few times. Actually, one of my first games as a Tau, I actually fought John a couple of years ago, probably.
You got it. Almost certainly.
Didn't remember half the rules for my army, but hey, it's the first time playing it.
Well, that was what was the really fun thing about the last edition of the book. Starting out with that and having no idea how to play this game whatsoever, mm-hmm. The 4th edition Codex, fantastic for that. It was thoroughly confusing for a brand new person.
Wonderful. So here's what we're going to do. Right now, at the time we're recording this, the Guard Codex has probably been out, officially released for about three weeks by the time you guys see it anyway. So we're going to assume that if you're already a Guard player, you've probably already got your hands on it, seen a little detail. So we're not going to do what I call story time with the Codex, where we go through and read all the little changes and, you know, just look at whose strength has gone up by 1 point, whose armor save has gone down by one. We're not going to bore you with all those little details. Instead, what we're going to do is look at the major changes and discuss how does it affect playing for the Imperial Guard and how does it affect playing against them. So if other armies, different, like other types of armies, like, say, close combat armies, shooty armies, maybe like my new dreaded Dark Eldar Rapid Strike army. I still don't know how to beat that one. But anyway, let's get started here. Let's go through each of the main sections, the obviously HQ, elites, troops, and so on. And then if you got time at the end, also go through the army organization. I mean, there's some huge changes, like how you actually go about building your army now, or how you might say changes that would affect how... Anyway, we'll get to that later if my brain's shutting down. If you got time, the new packages, the new Sentinel, the new squad box set with the 10-man set, and we'll see what happens when we got there. So,
absolutely.
What section do you want to start off with?
Let's start out with the overall changes that have been made between the two codexes.
Okay.
There have been some absolute major transitions that were in there, and one of the large fears that you know I had as a long-time Imperial Guard player is the overall organization of the forces that are in there. The doctrine system that was in the 4th edition book allowed for a lot of major changes and customization of your forces. With that system being removed, really didn't know going into it how much flexibility you were still going to have in your force.
Okay. So you're worried basically you could equip your squads with different weapons in 4th edition.
Yes.
You're wondering, could you still do that in 5th edition?
Absolutely, yes. Well, you had a lot of choices, like making them hardened fighters for increased weapon skill, giving all of your squads carapace armor, or mechanizing your armies. Massive changes. If it could be done with the doctrine system, I didn't.
So that's you're also talking about modifying the actual stats of yours before it gets.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
Close order drill to increase their initiative, all of that.
Okay. So can you still do that in 5th edition then?
Some of those have been left intact. The organizational doctrines that were in there, such as being able to take more advanced forces for your troop choices, as well as a lot of the mechanization that goes in your force is still intact. Though a few of the things, like close order drill, were removed from the book ultimately to make it simpler for people to play. It's a lot more accessible now than it was.
So that's the main reason, just for simplicity reasons, to kind of make things easier?
Pretty much.
It wasn't like something that was just ridiculously overpowered and needed to be now?
Okay. Not really, no.
Okay. Well, what else, and what other major overall changes? Anything else?
The addition of vehicle squadrons into the new book is a major departure from the way that it was before. Under the old editions of the book, a single Lehman Russ battle tank is a single Lehman Russ battle tank. It's one heavy support choice. Under this version, your tanks can actually come in companies of up to three for a single choice in the book.
Okay.
So you can potentially field mass quantities of armor that are in there. However, there are some disadvantages into that, which we can go into whenever you'd like.
Because I know one thing, like, just in general with 5th edition rules, they've actually, at least in my opinion, made the vehicle squadrons a little bit weaker, because now if the guy gets immobilized, he's just here to be destroyed.
Yes.
That's a little bit of a downer.
That is definitely the largest downer in there. I know I played a game against them yesterday, and my opponent was none too happy with his armored column when I blew up all 3 Lehman Russes in a single assault, 2 of which were because they were immobilized.
Yeah. So even the last vehicle gets immobilized, is it considered to be destroyed or not?
To my knowledge, the last vehicle is no longer part of a squadron.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it becomes independent then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless it's all done at the same time.
Okay, I see. So what are other major changes before we go into individual sections? Anything else?
There were a lot of significant changes to, not so much to the elites and mm-hmm. fast attack sections, but the HQ and troop sections have been massively revamped.
All right, so let's go with HQ. What do you think of the 3 biggest choices, three biggest changes? Let's start with that. What are the 3 biggest changes, do you think?
Well, in the 4th edition version of the book, the company command squad was allowed to take detachments of heavy weapon squads, detachments of special weapon squads, including demolition charges and all of that. You had sentinel squads that you can take in there. All of those have been removed from the actual company HQ slot and replaced with a series of advisors, such as the Master of the Fleet, the Master of Ordnance, psychic advisors. All of these types of forces are in there now, as well as the fact that you can switch out your main officer himself for a large quantity of different special characters.
So before, you could essentially take, were those guys function as bodyguards, like you said, the squads they had, or were they just extra guys that would run around?
They were extra squads.
Oh, okay.
You would take your command squad, which is the 5-man team consisting of an officer,
yep.
And then you would have all these different squads that you could take. Up to 5 other versions would be there. They didn't have to deploy anywhere near him. They were just attachments that you could take along with it.
So you essentially got more 4th organization slots.
Pretty much.
They wouldn't count towards, say, a fast attack or another troop choice.
Exactly.
Or the HQ choice. Okay.
Exactly. What they actually did with that, however, is they moved it into the general infantry platoon. So everything that was there, with the exception of the sentinels, was moved into a troop choice. So you can theoretically take a lot more now than you could with the old version.
Okay. Oh, so before, all those choices weren't even available in other sections of the army.
Not really, no. You could take them. There was a heavy support that you could take for some of it, but special weapon squads weren't in there.
Okay, so that's interesting. That is definitely a huge change then.
Mm-hmm.
What about anything else about the HQs?
Well, with the addition of,
orders?
Orders.
What else?
Orders are definitely a huge part of it, but you have different levels of commissars now, such as the Lord Commissar, as well as the standard one. Mm-hmm. But really, one of the biggest ones is, as Games Workshop has been releasing different codexes, we've all noticed that they've been increasing the amount of special characters that they've been putting right into the standard book and making them a much more central focus of it. And those are included right in the HQ section, like you would expect.
Yep. How many does new Imperial Guard Codex have?
Oh, man. Quite a few.
Really? Like 6, 7? Yeah,
I would say 7 to 10.
Okay. And are those limited to certain point values? Like, you have so many points in your army before you can use them?
No, absolutely not.
You can use them in any size army?
In any size army,
interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, like, I saw the old Tau book was from, almost 3 years ago, where all my special characters, you got to have at least a 1,500-point army to deploy them.
Starting with, starting several codexes ago, they stopped actually doing that.
Okay. So I wonder if So I guess everybody gets revamped, but what if everyone's going to get that advantage then? It's going
to
be interesting.
I would be willing to bet that as the books come out, they're removing those. I know you can feel free to take, Abaddon the Despoiler in your 500-point list if you can find a way to fit him.
That would be brutal. I've seen that guy, I've fought the guy a few times. That'd be brutal. But what about these orders now? That apply? There's different levels of them, right? The HQs have some, then the squad commanders have some as well.
Yep, and then you also have Ursiker Creed, who has his own Forcadia special order that he can issue as well.
So how are these going to affect gameplay? Because I know one of them allows them to no longer be pinned. So if they're pinned, you can basically give them orders to get back up. Isn't there one that incoming where the troops dive out of the way and increase the cover save or something like that?
They receive a 2+ cover save when they actually dive down to the ground and do that. Your orders are called,
That is nice.
Yes.
Who gives that out? Is that the HQ guys or is that the squad commanders get that one out?
That would be, I believe that one's the platoon HQ.
Okay.
So if you give me a second, I can actually.
Platoon, sorry, platoon squad. Okay. Yeah. get my terminology always wrong.
Yeah. You have your platoon-level officers and then your company-level officers. Company grade.
Now, also, though, squads can be affected by multiple orders.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, people are saying, like, you know, you have these, the platoon guy give out his incoming, then the leader, the company or whatever, the high-up guy gives out his get back up because the incoming causes them to be pinned, right?
Incoming, yes, it does. Yeah, it means so that they can't act normally until the end of your next turn.
Yay for crazy combinations that make things annoying.
Yes, they do.
But I play War Machine and use that kind of stuff. what about then, so that's enough HQs. What about, let's go down to troops. You said troops and other big changes.
Absolutely. Well, the troop choices are drastically different now. And some of the increases in that actually are in these orders still, where you've got the platoon command squad. They have those three orders that are right in there. So each of those commanders, and the most brutal of which I personally feel is the first rank fire, second rank fire, where they can double tap up to 24 inches away with their las guns.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's pretty nice.
Yep. So that one's absolutely brutal. Now, with the troop choices that are there, the size of the overall infantry platoons has been increased dramatically. Now, you can still only have five standard squads plus your command squad. However, as I had mentioned earlier, all of the attachments that were previously with your company HQ, those are now at the platoon level. So you can have up to five different squads of heavy weapons teams as part of your troop choice that are just attached with it. In addition to that, you have up to, I believe, two special weapon choices that are in there. And conscripts. Conscripts are part of it. They're not a separate troop choice on their own. So you could theoretically have well over 100 models in your single troop choice, making them absolutely drastically outnumber any other army out there in terms of just sheer numbers they can bring to the field.
So each force org chart then can have up to five heavy weapon squads, up to two specialists?
Each troop choice.
Oh my goodness. See, I guess if you're playing some ridiculously high point value, you could have six of those giant groups of guys running around?
Yes, you could.
Wow.
Theoretically, yes, you could. You could bring almost 1,000 troops to the field if you really tried with a single force organization chart. Yes, if you really worked at it.
Oh my goodness.
And those conscript squads, as before, they come anywhere from 20 to 50 soldiers as one giant squad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is also cool is your straight-up infantry squads can do the same, where you can have up to between 2 and 5 infantry squads for your platoon. Those can also combine almost like a reverse version of combat squads that the Space Marine can do, where at the point of deployment, you can take, say, 3 squads that you really want to have hold this objective and turn them into one giant Uber squad.
Hmm. That's kind of neat. Well, it's flexibility, so.
It's not just flexibility. Remember, your own troops don't block your own, they don't block your line of sight or provide cover.
You're right.
So if you've got a 30-man squad with 3 heavy weapons and 3 special weapons in there, you can really dish it out without offering up any kind of cover save at all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Because otherwise, if you're shooting even through your own guys, they still get cover saves and things. So that's
absolutely
interesting.
They've got to kill almost 30 models before they take a scoring unit out there. How devastating is that for the annihilation level missions?
Oh, that, because you know it's one kill point per org slot.
So. That was a huge disadvantage when 5th edition came out for the Guard, is they bring so many of those forces out there.
Yeah.
But you dump all 50 guys into a single scoring unit. Have fun.
Wow, that's interesting. Because that'll drop you down to like 15 possible kill points, like 5 or 6 or 7. And
yes, it does.
That gives you a huge advantage in those games. Those are really all about building large, powerful squads.
It certainly does. Yep.
What about just overall point values of the troops? Have they seen radical changes at all or not?
They seem to have dropped slightly.
Really? Okay.
Believe it or not, yes. And grenades have become standard. In the forces as well.
Automatically, everyone carries them automatically?
I'm 99% that they at least carry fragmentation grenades.
Okay.
So let me just make sure. Yes, frag grenades are standard.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
That's nice.
Now, added into the troop choices as well, of course you have your standard infantry platoon, which is the backbone of any Imperial Guard force. But added into that is you have your company veterans, which is a 10-man squad, that can be decked out pretty much just the exact same way as you would think stormtroopers and such would be able to. They don't have hell guns, but they can take a lot more specialist weaponry that are in there. And they're a troop choice. So feel free to throw a Chimera at them, armor them up, and let them go. So it's a cheaper alternative. And then for those of you who are really into a lot of awesome theme, thrown in there as well, you have the Penal Legion forces that are in there. Or you could take a squad of Penal Legion soldiers, which at first doesn't sound like much, but with the addition of the fact that they're stubborn, they can scout, and they have the Desperado special rule, which is absolutely incredible, allowing them to do anything from gain... if you roll a 3 or a 4, you get fleet, counterattack, and something else goes in there too. The first one for that, you can actually make it so all their las guns aren't rapid fire, they're assault too. Huh. So they can tap, tap, charge on their way in. Another one gives them 2 close combat weapons. There's all kinds of things that those things can do. Now they only come in 10-man squads and you can't give them transports, but, I mean, come on.
That's interesting. It's really interesting.
Finally, a way to use those catechins in your Cadian force.
What about weapons-wise? They still got the same basic weapons layout? Anything new or different or radically changed in that way?
Well, not a whole lot drastically different in terms of their weapons options available, no. The biggest one being the massively increased amount of armory that's in this book. All the Forge World variety tanks that were in there are pretty much been included in here. Everything from Hydra flat guns to all kinds of crazy stuff is in there now. Manticore missile launchers.
So those things before were actually only for Apocalypse. Cause and now they're actually for the normal standard game?
Yes,
are the same exact thing they were in?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. They don't use the 7-inch or 10-inch blast templates, of course, but a lot of those types of things are absolutely present.
What about is the Valkyrie the new?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a troop transport?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a troop choice, or is that dedicated transport?
That is a dedicated transport vehicle.
So what is this thing?
I'm sorry. That is not a dedicated transport vehicle. That is a fast attack choice.
Oh, okay, we'll get to
that. They come in squadrons of 1 to 3.
Okay, we'll get to those in a minute then.
Sure.
Do you want to do elites or fast attack next?
We can do elites.
Okay, let's go elites. Anything new and exciting here?
Well, in the elites section are a lot of the things you'd expect to see. You'll have Rattlings, which have awesome new models, and some much increased rules to make them more useful. Ogryns, which are still devastating. And then lastly is your Stormtroopers that are in there. Now, the one main unit that was added in that you didn't expect before is actually a unit of Psykers, where they take a group of sanctioned Psykers, essentially, with an Overwatcher to kind of guard them, keep them from going nuts, and they go out there and use their collective psychic might to wreak havoc on the battlefield.
They had those before in earlier editions?
They did not exist before, no.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting change then.
Mm-hmm. That's a brand new unit.
So I'm curious, when we played the Apocalypse Battle on Friday, who were the guys that dropped in the back and shot your Chaos Marines up? Were those the Stormtroopers?
Oh, those were Stormtroopers.
Okay. Those are some interesting weapons they have at the AP3.
Yes, those AP3 Hellguns. My poor Fabius Biomarines got absolutely cut to ribbons by those things. Yeah.
Interesting.
Rapid firing groups of Stormtroopers are deadly.
They had a grenade launcher in there and a few other things. That was an interesting adventure. But
yep.
Do you expect to see any major play style change with the elites, or are they just pretty much run of the mill, same kind of things?
I think that you'll see the elites getting used a lot more for what they were really intended for. In the 4th edition version of the book, it was a rare thing that I didn't use the Grenadier's Doctrine to turn my Stormtroopers into troop choices. With that no longer being necessary because of the fact that you have company or you have your veteran squads as troop choices, you'll be able to see a lot more Ogryns and Rattlings being used for the purpose that they're really designed to be used as, instead of an excuse for taking more armor in your army.
Okay.
For those treadheads out there.
So what about the Psykers then? Do they carry kind of psychic abilities similar to what the other Imperium forces have, or do they have something radically new and crazy?
They have got some pretty crazy stuff in there, yes. Well, as an HQ level advisor, you have the Primaris, Alpha Primaris level Psyker, I believe is what it's called. But they have quite a bit to them that I just honestly can't remember right off the
top of my head. Takes a lot to memorize these books.
Yes, that's right. Oh, that's right. They get their lightning arc. Yeah.
So they're kind of...
That's right. Strength 6, Assault 2d6. Nice. With a 24-inch range. Yes.
Sounds like a fun weapon.
Yeah.
Does that require them to pass like a psychic test like normal and then they just go ahead and use it?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep. Right. For those of you who are into the Emperor Palpatine style... Gah!
Okay, alrighty. Sounds good. Should we do fast attack next?
Sure.
Let's start with the Valkyries. These are obviously the big kind of new shiny toys that GW is showing.
Oh, yeah.
What, I mean, they look almost like they could be some kind of attack helicopter, almost like that hovers around. But are they actually?
Yes,
what are they
do.
Exactly?
What they actually are is it's a troop transport. It's a flying troop transport where they come in and they do suborbital drops. You can do grav shoot insertions while their flyers are on the move. And what's really nice about them in the game is the Valkyries can deep strike. And as they deep strike, they can actually drop their forces off. So.
So is that how they kind of simulate the fact that there's really no flyer rules from the base 40K? Is that their ability to strike in, they kind of act as a skimmer from that point on?
Exactly.
Okay.
Or you can scout with them. You can do that as well.
How many guys do you stick in them?
They have access for 12 models.
Oh, okay. So they drop off a little squad, and they have decent weaponry on them? Is it just?
Yes, they do. Okay. You can. You have two choices, really, and that's between the Hellstrike missiles and the multiple rocket pods. As one variant. And that's assuming that you're going for the Valkyrie transport. Now, for those of you with conversion mindset, you can actually do some conversions on there to turn it into a Vendetta gunship. Also a fast attack choice. Now, both of these come in squadrons of 1 to 3, but the gunship is almost like what the Vulture gunship was before, where it has no transport capacity whatsoever. It's purely out there to bring the pain.
So they had some guy kind of like this before in earlier editions?
Not in earlier editions. That was purely Imperial armor.
Okay. All right. So they brought it in from those books. Okay.
Yes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So what else we got for fast attack?
Well, they did a revamp, actually, of the Hellhound, increasing it from just one single choice up to three different actual choices that you've got in there.
So three variations of the same vehicle?
Three variations.
Okay.
You got it. And those are, of course, the Hellhound, the Devil Dog, and the Bane Wolf. The Hellhound being your standard sort of Inferno cannon-wielding monstrosity. The Devil Dog does not have a flamethrower on it. In fact, it uses a Melta cannon, which is sort of like a plasma cannon, but strength 8, AP 1, blast of death. Yeah, and then the last one, is we have the chemical cannon.
Oh, okay, so we got that. Interesting. So just same basic stats straight up, just different weapons, though? That's really makes a difference?
Well, it's an AP3 template that poisons on a 2-up. So fairly brutal for those of you who are into, melting space marines.
So what does the poison do?
Poison means that when you're rolling to... Well, first off, it's a template, so you don't have to roll the hit at all.
Yep.
And then when you're rolling to wound, no matter what it is, it wounds on a 2-up.
Okay, so the armor saves then?
Yeah, well, assuming it's got a 2-up armor save, it does. Otherwise, the weapon's AP3.
Oh, that is kind of brutal.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to avoid a splash of acid just being doused with it.
That's a fun little guy.
Yes, it is.
Are they about the same point values?
Yeah, they're right around the same points cost as each other. And would be really great. I know we're all hoping for more plastic kits coming from GW for all these different tanks that are out there. But currently, there's nothing to represent Devil Dogs and Bane Wolves.
Okay.
So it'd be great to see something like that happen. Though a conversion wouldn't be too tough to do.
Are they still planning to release more Imperial Guard stuff? Because obviously, you've seen some of the new things come out. Which
I guarantee
later,
there's going to be more Imperial Guard coming out. Just like with all the Space Marines and Orcs, you're going to see Waves 2, maybe even Wave 3 coming out as models are released all year long.
Okay. So out of curiosity, on the next page, you get the Hydra Flak Tank.
Yes.
Which obviously was one of the Apocalypse guys, right?
Yeah.
So, when there's no rules for aircraft, what do you need a flak tank for? How do they convert that to be actually for use in normal games?
I see.
Any certain advantages it gave it, or?
Well, there are actually advantages. It has an auto-targeting system that's built right into it as one of its special rules, making it so that skimmers and bikes cannot actually claim cover saves to get shots from them.
Oh, okay. Oh, so when they move super fast.
Yep. So.
Oh. Even, does it negate the in-ball saves from the movement super fast, or just the cover saves?
Just the cover saves that you get from it. But moving really fast doesn't give you an invulnerable save anymore. That's a straight-up cover save.
Okay.
So
some of the bikes still have that, though?
It's always a cover save.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it doesn't really matter in this case, but...
Turbo-boosting bikes is a cover save. No. It's a cover save, not an invulnerable.
The guy who's playing the Apocalypse match said it was an invulnerable save, which didn't matter in that case, but it's just a terminology thing.
Well, it's impossible. It is possible I'm wrong.
I don't know. Who knows? So, okay. What do you think in terms of playstyle? Are we going to see different... What are the Sentinels? Are they fast attack too still?
The Sentinels, yes. The Sentinels are a fast attack.
Okay.
But
what do you think of overall playstyle of the fast attack units? Are they still pretty much going to fill the same basic roles it did before?
Yes. You're going to see fast attack choices very much so being used as a supplementary role, just like you would expect from any of the other previous editions of the Guard. They're not really the fastest, most agile force out there. Even if you're using Valkyries, you still got to worry about the fact that, you know, they're not like drop pods that are just going to drop down, hit, disgorge, and go. You still have to kind of be careful about what you're doing. The Imperial Guard, they call them the hammer of the Emperor for a reason. They're not really meant as a surgical scalpel.
So, okay, so we're down to the heavy support then, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do we got? Anything new? Big changes? Or just the tank squadron is a big thing?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the heavy support section and the armor in this has been absolutely increased a massive amount. They took a little bit of what was going on, actually, in the old armored company rules and threw that in there in the addition of having special characters in your tanks, like Knight Commander Pask, who's a tank ace, giving you a little bit of extra versatility.
With all those variations of Lehman Russ in there before, is that all new?
Most of these are new.
Okay.
In the previous editions, all you had was the standard Lehman Russ battle tank, the old workhorse of the Imperium. You had the... and the Demolisher. Now you have the Executioner, the Punisher, the Eradicator, the Vanquisher, and, of course, the Exterminator, which previously, man, we all kind of mostly thought that the Space Wolves only used. But the Exterminator is even better now than it was before. It's not just autocannons.
So are we expecting people to actually... Is there a lot of different reasons to use different models in Lehman Russ? They all built for different roles, then?
Oh, yeah. They're built for different roles, without a doubt. One of the biggest ones that's in there is... I'm a huge fan of the Lehman Russ Punisher myself. So I just love the idea of having a 20-shot heavy weapon.
That's the Gatling gun thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's the Gatling cannon.
20-shot heavy weapon?
Yes.
That is disgusting.
Yes.
And, of course, you can kind of mix and match these squadrons, right? So you can put any combination of those vehicles in the squadron?
Yes, you can. Yep.
So you
strength
kind of...
5, heavy 20.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
At least there's no armor piercing right
now. Oh, do you need it? Come on, make them roll enough dice. You'll kill them. You'll kill Terminators if you make them roll enough.
Strength 5, every 20. You got 3 of those in a squad and you're rolling 6
yeah.
times a turn?
Uh-huh.
That is just brutal. That's like more shots than Talyers you fire.
Yeah, good luck, Tyranids. Have fun, orcs. Ga 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 ga.
So I guess the one thing nice about giving you the fact you got the squadrons now, you can, like I said, mix and match the different ones, and therefore, you know, build the squads so they're a little more versatile.
Yep.
Instead of just having lots of anti-armor, you obviously got maybe the normal Lehman Russ, and you got that Gatling gun thing that just really chews up the infantry.
Yes, you can do that. Though, just like when you're developing your heavy weapon squads, you really need to carefully consider the composition of these squadrons that are in there, because your squadrons all need to fire at the same target.
Oh,
so,
that's right. There's no target locker. There's no any way to get
there's no crazy Tauness going on in the Imperial Guard. No.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Your squadron's got to shoot at the same target, so you don't want to do too much of a mix between anti-infantry and anti-tank in the same ones. Otherwise, you're going to end up wasting large amounts of ordnance.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Interesting. That'd be something to consider.
Yep. In my game I played yesterday, there was a Demolisher tank in a company of 3 that also had 2 Lehman Russ battle tanks in it. And all he was trying to do was take out my Terminators that were there. But to take out the Terminators with that Demolisher tank, he was just wasting battle cannon shells that could have just as easily gone to take down the squad of assault marines that was just about to assault him.
Those are the 3 tanks you blew up?
Yeah.
With the 2 immobilized?
With those assault marines in 1 assault phase. Oh, yeah. Crack grenades for the win.
Ooh, I see. That's interesting. So you gives you somewhat more flexibility, but like you said, you got to really think about it. Otherwise, you're just going to be wasting stuff, and you're just wasting the points at that point then.
Yep. Okay. And it's always been difficult to put together an armored company and bring enough brutality to bear to be able to really win the game. The fact that you can't capture objectives makes it a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
You pretty much have to rely on annihilation to get the job done. Not as easy to do if you're not careful with the composition of your squadrons.
Let's see. I think we've gone through all the major ones: HQ, fast attack, elite, heavy support, and troops. That's all of them. Yes.
Essentially, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit then about overall army organization. How do you think you're going to build your armies differently?
Well, as always, the the beautiful thing about the Imperial Guard is the fact that you can really do just about anything you want with them. You have massive versatility in this book. Anything you really want to do, you can get done. You can still do your penal legions. You can still do your armored companies. You know, for those of you airborne fans out there, you can absolutely do your all air insertion 101st Airborne-esque type of army. Really, anything you want to do with this force, you can. You can bring numbers like no other book in the game. You can bring tanks like no other book in the game. The Imperial Guard gives you the versatility to play any way you want. Which the downside of that is, of course, the monetary investment that comes with it.
Yes, I can imagine it's very expensive.
Yes. So really, anything you want to do with it. Though, as Games Workshop continues to release these excellent kits and make them plastic, things are getting cheaper and cheaper, mm-hmm. which is always, always good.
Do you think we're going to see more specialized armies? Because, you know, you got so many more variations of things you can choose. I think people are going to design more anti, like, Tyranid armies or anti, like, Tau armies and
they
stuff.
Certainly could. If you know who you're playing...
That's a huge advantage for
yeah,
you.
It could be a massive advantage. If your buddy's an Orc player, there's no reason why you shouldn't try and convert up a squadron of those Lehman Russ Punishers. My God. The damage that you can wreak out is unimaginable.
This is brutal. 60 shots
yeah.
going into the...
60 strength, 5 shots.
Orc boys?
Yeah, gone.
Yeah, they're...
You'll eradicate whole things. Now, granted, they still hit on a 4 up, but...
Still, that's 30 shots going into them about, and then maybe, you know, 15, 20 shots
yep.
wounding, and then, yeah, you're probably taking down 12, 13 models a turn.
Easily.
Assume they don't have a very good armor save.
Which they probably don't if they're Orcs.
Yes, they probably don't.
Yep. You can bring the numbers like no other, and... One of the greatest advantages of the Guard is the sheer volume of scoring units that you can bring to the table.
All the troops?
You can bring scoring units like no one else's business out there.
Because there's so much more variety in your troop choices.
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yep. But if you are worried about those annihilation missions, you can really trim that down quite a bit to make it, you know, not quite to the level that maybe a Space Marine player would, but you can still do pretty well. Okay. You're not just going to be outmatched right from the get-go.
So I'll be curious sometime if you like to come back in the show in a few episodes, kind of if you play some games, really see how a lot of your ideas work out and see what works good, what doesn't. And
Yep.
So one thing I noticed interesting about the book, as I was looking through it, a lot of the various characters, or just in general, they have lots of more background text about them.
Yeah.
I noticed compared to like my Tau book where you literally have nothing for each individual unit.
60 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that something like, is that just kind of a general direction Games Workshop is going, where they're going to try to get more background flavor to all the different units?
Without a doubt. We've all noticed that just about every book that's been coming out has been well over 100 pages and absolutely packed full of artwork, background, and organized in such a way that it makes sense. It's much more accessible a book than mm-hmm. previous iterations of the Guard were.
So why don't we talk a little bit about the actual new packages and get the new... products for the Imperial Guard that are coming out. Obviously, the new 10-man squads.
Mm-hmm.
And they have... The general idea is that you put as many options in the box as possible, right? So you've got
yep.
all your different weapons you can actually give them in the box.
Mm-hmm.
So have you got a hold of any of the new models yet?
Yes. The models I've gotten a hold of so far have been the new Sentinel, okay. The Valkyrie, and the Command Squad for the Cadians.
Okay, so are they still looking pretty good? Everything's...
Oh, my God. They're gorgeous.
Better detail than before.
That Valkyrie, I just finished painting it up, and I did it in almost a World War II style scheme. Not with the teeth on the front, of course, but more of a traditional kind of look. It's sort of a combination of the Lucky 13s army that those of you who have been in the Games Workshop stores have become familiar with. Sort of a combination of that with World War II. So green interiors, Normandy invasion stripes up on the tail booms, all sorts of fun stuff going on with that. But that is a gorgeous kit. Workable sliding doors on the sides, gunners that you can put in there. If you're careful with it, you can even put those guns in such a way that they can fold in and you can shut the doors. That way, if you don't want to take them in there, you can. For those of you magnetically inclined, you can absolutely magnetize the weapon payloads on the wings to switch those up. Gorgeous kit. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
I'm trying to see if I find the pictures of the Lucky 13 Army. Is that...
That
thing right there? That color kind of?
No, not really. It's
okay.
It's sort of a brown for the armored sections of it, And then almost that, it's like a shard on granite mixed with maybe a little bit of bleach bone in there to bring that tone up for the all the cloth sections with red trim for the Aquilas and a lot of the other areas. And it uses a really cool Ace of Spades thing with the Lucky 13 symbol on it.
What do you think about, in terms of the new models, do you like the idea of having all the stuff in one box, or would you rather have the separate types?
It's better, no.
Even though it's probably a little more expensive for you, for a model?
In a lot of cases, the price is actually cheaper.
Oh, really?
The prices are the same, if not cheaper, on just about everything in there.
Oh,
now, granted, we did see a few price increases on the Valkyries that was coming out, and of course, Games Workshop says that that was always intended, but we'll never really know the truth.
We got a few more price increases coming June 1st, too, so...
Yeah, they do a price increase every summer, so I wouldn't be surprised too much. Though I would be surprised if the price of plastic increased at all, because, you know, everything they've been doing in plastic has been dropping in price, which is good.
Mm. So we're getting a little bit close to the end of the show. We've got a few minutes left to talk about things. Is there anything in this book that kind of hints at how GW is trying to shape the game? Any new abilities that really show, okay, maybe GW is trying to take the game overall more in this direction? Anything like that stands out?
I think that what Games Workshop seems to be doing is they've noticed a massive success with the launch of Apocalypse. And over the last year and a half, the sales that have been generated from massive armies have really been, you know, amazing for them.
You're talking about the giant box sets they offer?
Oh, yeah. Well, not just the giant box sets, but just overall, the people collecting Apocalypse armies now. I mean, there was a time when, you know, the thought of a battle company of Space Marines was inconceivable. And now it seems like everyone and his brother has got a battle company.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. You're going to collect a company? Yeah, right. Good luck. Then they sold a box that was a company.
Yeah.
So the sheer volume of models that people are coming out with, along with foundation paints and ways to increase the painting have really been helping with it. But I think as they've noticed the increased success with Apocalypse, they're trying to make it so that the armies that people are building for that are more in line with what they're actually seeing in the book. Hence the mass quantities of vehicle squadrons and the things that you're seeing in the Imperial Guard book.
Do you think we're going to see more vehicle squadrons of the other armies? Like, do the orcs get new ones and the Space Marines get new vehicle squadrons?
There are no squadrons currently in any of the other books.
Okay.
I don't know. It's possible, I guess. Though I would be surprised if any of the other armies did end up having that, just because of the fact that the Imperial Guard, there's whole armies based on armor. So it makes sense that within the context of a single force organization chart, they're going to bring more tanks to bear than anybody.
What about like the new orders that all the guys can give out? Do you think that we're going to see those in other armies? Or are those more of a way to kind of fill in gaps where the other armies might have, like, psychic abilities give people similar things? Do you think it's something we're going to see across other armies, or is it really just...
It'd be cool. Though, again, I would be surprised to see orders come down in any of the other forces. I think it just... Most of the people who play Imperial Guard do so because they're very, very much so the most relatable army that's out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, man, they're dudes with las guns just sent to the fight. They're fighting aliens, for God's sake. It's awesome. And the idea of the officer standing behind them just kind of screaming out orders is just, I don't know, it says a lot, it adds a lot to the image of the game, and that's ultimately what Games Workshop wants to convey. So they want to be able to tell a good story, show a really cool image that's out there, and, you know, have an impressive looking game as well as a fun, free-flowing one.
Okay, makes sense. So let's see. We got 2 minutes left. We can talk about something.
Okay.
What do we think? What's next? Who's getting revamped next? Because we've heard Necrons, I've heard Space Wolves. Any ideas? Anyone take a guess?
Well, I've heard Necrons, I've heard Space Wolves. Of course, we always hear about the Dark Eldar being done. Though who
knows? Come back someday.
I personally feel that Space Wolves are probably up next as far as Warhammer 40,000 goes.
Okay.
Yep. And then probably Necrons after that.
So how about... Also, because like I mentioned, we had some Imperial Guard deploy in the Apocalypse.
Oh, and don't forget the Tyranids. I've heard about Tyranids coming.
Ooh, I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Apocalypse battle we played on the Friday, we actually had one guy deploy the new Imperial Guard army out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things about the orders we didn't talk about is the orders can apply to other Imperium troops.
Yes.
Marines and things.
Yes, they can.
That That's interesting, because I mean, that makes, obviously you really can't deploy a mixed space, you can't really deploy a mixed Space Marine Imperial Guard under normal rules, but in Apocalypse...
Yes, you can. Yep. Absolutely. It is, there's no words to describe the amount of sick things that you can do when you start issuing orders to things like that. Now, in your standard games, of course, you can mix your Inquisition forces with your Imperial Guard.
Okay.
And there's no reason that you can't induct some Imperial Guard into your Sisters of Battle Force and start using faith points to soup up your shots to AP1, then order up, I don't know, first rank fire, second rank fire. Or, you know, something along those lines.
Oh, that would be interesting to see that mess.
Oh, yeah. You can do some downright dastardly stuff if you really work at it.
All right, well, that's about reaching just about the end of the show here.
Sure.
I guess I got nothing else to add. Anything else you want to talk about? About 2 minutes? Anything else?
No, not really, though. I just, you know, I want to point out that I'm very impressed with the new Sentinel kit that's come out. The addition of the plasma cannon, las cannon, all the different bits that are in there to do it up as armored or scout version. Absolutely fantastic. And the fact that it is now armor 12 in the front. Absolutely devastating for those close combat games. It was 10.
Really?
Yeah. So it jumped from 10 to 12 for that armored Sentinel.
Oh, so I actually survived a little bit longer.
It survives really well.
I had a squad of Space
Marines. Yeah. And I had a squad of Space Marines. It charged me, and I thought, yeah, whatever. It's a Sentinel. Have fun. I'll get it eventually. No. No, I didn't. Crack grenades, rolling a 6 to hit it, rolling a 6 to glance it, and then trying to slowly wear it down is next to impossible.
Nice. Is that just the armored version has that, or the scout version has as well?
The scout, or the armored version has.
Okay.
That. Scout version is, I believe, still armor 10.
Okay. That'll make things interesting then.
Mm-hmm. Well worth the points.
Well worth the points. Sounds good. Okay, well, thanks for coming to the show. Glad to have you on.
Yeah, that's my pleasure.
You're welcome to come back whenever you want.
Sure.
To finish things up, we're actually sitting over there. I can't see, it's not on camera, but it's, I got my copy of Blood Bowl. We're going to do the review of that. We actually, because the past couple episodes, we were running a poll on what game people want to see us review next.
Oh, awesome.
There's all these new games up against Blood Bowl, and Blood Bowl swept them all. So I'm like, oh, whatever.
Excellent.
Have you ever played Blood Bowl before?
I played in a Blood Bowl league quite a while ago with some borrowed models and had a blast with it. Our commissioner did a really good job.
It looks like it'd be a lot of fun to play. I can't wait to get... I literally just got it today, so I haven't punched the things out. I've read through the rule book a little bit.
Yep.
Some other interesting things. But yeah, so that'll be coming out. Probably not for a couple weeks. I got a few other shows lined up in the meantime to do.
Yeah. But are you going to talk at all about the Blood Bowl video game that's coming along as well?
Possibly. Assuming I get a hold of the copy of that at some point. I actually finally got my Xbox back from Microsoft after they decided to repair it for free at that E74 mess. But hey... So nice. Whenever that comes out, also there's a PC version, so I don't know if I'd probably get the Xbox one though, just so I could play with other people easier.
Sure. I don't know when it's coming out, but it looks absolutely
It does. Alright, well, let's go ahead and just finish up.
Okay.
If you have any questions or comments, send them over to me at jason@rocklesoftware.com. That's rocklesoftware.com. Of course, follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/TT_battlefield. Ryan's not here to promote his Twitter, so he misses out. That's his fault. As you mentioned, you don't use Twitter at all, so that's
I'm not much of a Twitter fan myself, but if you do need to get a hold of me, you can feel free to email me at john.albers@yahoo.com.
All right. So thanks for watching. Once again, I'm Jason.
I'm John.
And we'll see you again in about 2 weeks on the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
The Tabletop Battlefield is copyright 2007-2009 by Jason Rutherford and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer and is acquired from www.patefighter.com and is used under a Creative Commons License.